F1A. Number 8A.
So, again, we have first to ask always, now, what is the focal point of Christianity? Focal point of Christianity is idea, because idea is the outcome of the Christ idea, of the Word. So we have Word, God, as the focal point, then the Christ, the manifestation as God's likeness. And then when we have that manifestation, is in the form of ideas, just as in the translation of immortal mind. And so the focal point is idea, and it will have to show that the Christ is responsible for maintaining and preserving and safeguarding the idea, so that the idea is never in danger, or that, in other terms, that the idea is preserved, that it cannot be destroyed. Which would answer a great question that we always have within ourselves, namely that we feel that something which is of the nature of good can be destroyed, that it can be taken away from us, that it can be weakened, that it can get sick, and so on. So that all that within our consciousness, which always in a lingering way feels at any moment something evil can come around the corner which we haven't expected and is attacking the idea, is endangering the idea, that consciousness is being corrected through the prophets here. So all those assumptions or those suggestions that good could be endangered must be corrected. And so we will see that those prophets that come now, Nahum, Habakkuk, Zephaniah, and Ezekiel, that they all speak around the idea and how that idea is being preserved, that nothing can happen to the idea. That is mostly being brought out right away with the first one, with Nahum. Nahum means, translated into English, comforter. And he was from Elkosh, which means God's sternness or God's unyieldingness. So, translated into the language of metaphysics, it means this prophet comforts us. He comforts us in which way? In showing that you can't move God's creation, that God is a stern and unyielding, so that God's creation cannot be disturbed in any way, that it never yields to any error. And that's the big subject of Nahum, because he wants to show that Israel is constantly afraid of Nineveh, the capital of Assyria, and he wants to show that Nineveh is not a great power. Though to material sense it is the greatest power, Nineveh at that time was controlling 22 different kingdoms in the Middle East, and naturally was also controlling the kingdoms of Judah and Israel. They had to pay tribute to the king in Nineveh, in Assyria. And they were always afraid that Nineveh would destroy Israel. So the prophet Nahum had to show the people that Nineveh is not a danger for the spiritual idea. And in order to show that, he must show that error has no tenacity, that truth is tenacious. And so it translated to our language, we will see that the prophet will show that error has no tenacity, that error is never the victor. Because the belief is that there are certain kinds of errors that are invincible, like a disease that is incurable. We talk about incurable diseases and so on, giving a sense that there are situations, negative situations, which are much mightier, which are much stronger than what the spiritual idea can accomplish. And so he has to rectify that and put it straight. In order to do that, he uses a great symbol from history. Namely, he compares Nineveh with the capital in Upper Egypt at a time before, that capital called No, was a capital in Upper Egypt that was fortified very strongly, that had the fortification of the water of the Nile on every side, had strong walls and so on. And he says, in spite of that, No did fall. And in the same way, he depicts then Nineveh is also fortified with all those strongholds, with the water around the city and so on. And he predicts that Nineveh will fall before the army of the Lord. So he shows that truth will always be the victor, that error can never claim supremacy over truth, over the true idea. And that therefore error has no tenacity, can never claim that it is invincible. That's the whole story of Nahum. So it gives a good picture first, which corrects within us, that says, don't ever say there is a problem that cannot be solved. Don't ever think that there is a problem that is so big that it is bigger than truth. That's not true. Truth is always bigger, is always stronger, and therefore truth will always rebut the beliefs of error and the claims of error. So shows the inviolability of God's idea and therefore the invincibility of the idea. That's really a simple picture. But then, you know, we say these things. We learn these things in the textbook, that truth is always the victor, that truth is always superior to error, that there is no error that cannot be solved. We know all these things and we repeat them. But the question is, do we know it? Do we believe in it? Is this a reality within ourselves? And then we must say, oh, actually, we don't quite believe in it. We still believe and are afraid of what's going on in the world. We are afraid of incurable diseases. We are afraid of accidents. We are afraid of death. We are afraid of the future. We are afraid of a nuclear war. We are afraid of this and that and the other. And we have to go a bit deeper and see that we have to rebut the various arguments that may come up against this great proposition of Nahum. And so we behave like Habakkuk. We behave like Habakkuk because he was the one who was querying God, who was querying Nahum. He said, well, Nahum says truth is always victorious, but I see that that is not so. And he starts out his prophecy by telling in three different big questions that he says to God, it's not so. I see that error has more power. The foreign nations just come in and overthrow Israel. I see that error has more substance than the spiritual idea. And he sees that the physical senses have more power than spiritual sense. And he depicts that. We will go through it when we do some text reading. But just here to summarize it, in the first three subjects of mind, spirit, soul, he questions really the supremacy of truth over error, and says, I can see that that is not so. What is the solution that Habakkuk gives? The solution is that he says, you know, you are looking out from a wrong standpoint. You are looking at things from the point of view of the material senses, from the point of view of mortal mind, from the point of view of matter, from the point of view of material senses. And if you do that, then you see that error is more powerful than truth. But this is not the way to look at things. And so it tells him in the fourth subject, it tells him, you have to change your standpoint. And so he asks him and says, well, I will stand on the tower, to go up on the watchtower, and I will stand upon my watch and set me up on the tower and will watch to see what he will say unto me. Can you see? He changes his standpoint. He says, I have been looking out from my standpoint, from the standpoint of mortal mind, matter, physical sense testimony. Now he says, I change that standpoint. I go up higher and higher and stand watch on the tower. And there I will watch and see what he, the Lord, will tell me. What he sees. Does the Lord see the situation the same way as I do see it? Naturally, he can't see the same thing. The moment we change our standpoint from the personal I to the divine principle, to the divine I, to the divine standpoint, then we see the whole situation completely different. The just shall live by his faith, the Lord says to him. He lives by his faith, not by the testimony of his physical senses. With faith, the Old Testament naturally did not mean blind faith, but it meant more what we would call today spiritual understanding. And so the just shall live by the spiritual sense, by spiritual understanding, and not by the testimony of the physical senses. And so if you look out from there, he then says in the next subject, can you see what you see? Then he says, for the earth shall be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord, as the water covers the sea. You see the superabundance of being. The moment he does not look out with his limited, from his limited standpoint, with its limited tools of perceiving, and changes that standpoint and says, I'm looking out from God, and if I look out from God, then I'm really looking out from science. We have seen metaphysics is looking up to God, but science is looking out from God. And looking out from God, we can only see the superabundance of being. So that the earth will be filled of the knowledge of God, good, just as the water covers the sea. And that is the pith of his prophecy. No, it isn't the pith of his prophecy. He goes on, and that's really interesting. He goes on and says, all right, I use my spiritual sense, and with my spiritual sense I can see really the superabundance of being. And so he begins to pray. And he begins to pray, and he's the praying prophet. He's the only prophet that is praying. And he begins in the sixth subject to pray, and sees spiritually really everything in the light of God. And then in the last subject he says, and still the material evidence is still the same. In spite of my spiritual vision and looking at things from a spiritual standpoint, the material evidence has not changed. It's still as bad as before. I still see that the crops are not good, that the cattle have not enough to eat and to drink, and he goes on and shows the desolation of the land and says, this is still so. And he ends it with that rather negative view. And that's typical. That's very typical. It is that Habakkuk is really like one of us. We do the same thing. We also are in situations that look bad, are standing before problems that we don't know how to solve it. Then we try to be a Habakkuk and enumerate what is going wrong and to enumerate and build up the whole problem, how mighty it is. And then we think, but I'm a Christian Scientist, and in Christian Science I have learned that I should not look at things in a material way, with my material eyes. I really should know something, what I've been reading in the textbook. I must look at it as God looks at it. And so we try our best to look at the problem from God's point of view. And we do our work, as we say, or we pray and we work spiritually. And then when we have done that, we get up and feel the situation is still the same. I still feel pain, I still feel troubled, I still feel sick, I still don't see a way out. And you feel that there is a spiritual evidence and a material evidence, and that those two have not yet, not that the spiritual evidence has not gained ascendancy over the material evidence. And that's typical for that prophet. It's typical for us. It is seeing the idea spiritually right, but not seeing that it demonstrates itself in material evidence. And then, if we are there, then we have to be careful. If we stop there and are disillusioned, then we have lost the case. If we give up at that point and have not trust in our spiritual work, then naturally it cannot come to fruition. It only comes to fruition when we go further to Zephaniah, because Zephaniah is then that one that will tell us to be a sticker and to stick to our vision. And so we come to Zephaniah as the next prophet, which shows the disappearance of the material evidence before the spiritual facts. In Habakkuk, we only have changed the standpoint and have looked out from another standpoint. But then we must see that that vision has within itself a demonstrating power, that it has within itself the power to overturn and overturn and overturn until it comes whose right it is. Until, therefore, error disappears, that's our third horizontal, that error actually then disappears, that the material evidence then disappears, and the spiritual evidence is coming to light. So, Zephaniah, which means in English, Yahweh is darkness, or he whom Yahweh has hidden, is very typical for him, because he talks about the day of the Lord, and that day of the Lord is hidden. The day of the Lord is hidden as long as we are just taking the standpoint of Habakkuk. It doesn't, the spiritual demonstration doesn't show itself yet. It's still hidden. But it's there. But it's there until that day of the Lord becomes also the day of judgment. And he has a whole series of renderings about that day. That day of the Lord is also the day of judgment, which is the judging error, which is saying, you err, you are wrong. It's the day of trouble. That day of the Lord is now also the day of trouble to error. It's a day of distress to error. It's a day of wrath, he says, to error. It's a day of desolation to error. So that day of the Lord is the day of gloominess to error, because error has to yield and has to disappear and will be destroyed. It's that day of the Lord is the day of the Lord's wrath and of the Lord's anger. Can you see how wonderful he depicts that the day of the Lord, which is naturally the day of light, the day of solution, the day of truth, which is the day of victory, is at the same time for error the day of trouble, of distress, of wrath, of desolation, of gloominess, the day of wrath, and the day of anger. Meaning that for error, the day of the Lord is the day of self-destruction. And this is why that prophet Zephaniah, though it is a short text, is full of terms that indicate the complete destruction of error. Yes, those renderings, I will destroy, I will utterly consume, I will cut off, I will cut down, I will devour, I will drive out, I will root up, I will spoil, I will slay, I will make waste. Can you hear? I will make waste all the land and all the earth. It's a complete sense of destruction that he brings to error at this point. So Habakkuk is not the end of our demonstration, of our treatment. Habakkuk is just a bridge from Nahum to Zephaniah. Nahum, what did he say? He first defined really the divine purpose and says, look here, the divine purpose is what? That error is not invincible. Error can be wiped out. Truth is the victor. And that's just that. Or saying, there is no error that is bigger than truth. There is no error that could destroy truth. Truth will always destroy error. This is just a statement, the word. Just a blunt statement. But it hasn't yet been demonstrated. So, in order to demonstrate it in the human, we need, therefore, Habakkuk, which says, look here, this is a statement which is not supported by the testimony of the physical senses. The testimony of physical senses negate what Nahum has said. I can see with the physical senses the very opposite, namely that error is more powerful than truth, that the enemies come into my land and just overflood Israel, and they will spoil Israel and take away everything from Israel. All the values and all the substance will be taken away from Israel. But Habakkuk says, this is because you have not taken a right standpoint. You have to go and go on the top of the tower and look out from that tower. From that tower you have the vision. You have the vision that you see only God's abundance, the fullness of God, the fullness of life. and you should pray in that light. And so he's a praying prophet that tries to keep that vision, to establish within his spiritual sense the true sense of God's universe that is full, that is intact and fulfilled and perfect, though you may not yet see it physically, though it may not have exemplified itself properly in the material level of existence. Therefore, you need a Zephaniah to pull through. You need that Zephaniah where you have to stick to your guns and not give in at the first moment. If the demonstration is not made just in that very second and at that very moment, don't give in, because you must see that first all error must be destroyed. And your vision that you have had in Habakkuk is that which in Zephaniah will be the day of the Lord, the judgment day of the Lord. And that judgment day of the Lord will be for error the day of wrath, the day of anger, the day of desolation, the day of dismay, the day of gloominess and trouble. It will disappear. And then, when that has disappeared, when that has been destroyed, then he ends his prophecy with an enormous, beautiful picture, like a picture of a paradise where everything is blooming, where everything is established and re-established, where the remnant is brought back and finds only the superabundance of God good. And there you have then that the spiritual vision has been then is evidenced also in the material level of existence, so that also the physical senses can testify to the right ideas.